everybody, and welcome to the extended free preview of this month's episode of What a Cartoon Movie, all about 1941's Dumbo. I'm one of your hosts, Bob Mackie, and yes, I am holding the magic feather that lets me podcast very well. Who's here with me today?
Straight from heaven down to you, it's Henry Gilbert.
Aw. And yes, this month we are covering Disney's Dumbo. No, not the 2019 one. We looked at it a few times and we were like, no thanks. We're covering the classic 64-minute movie, nice and brief, about a flying elephant. Spoilers, the elephant flies in the last 4 minutes. And you're going to hear all about it in our very, very long podcast if you're a $10 subscriber. But if you're on the free feed, you're going to hear a brief sample, and brief, I mean like 45 minutes, of the full thing. You're going to hear about how this movie saved the Disney company. You're going to hear about how this was not a movie they really wanted to make, but it's a movie they needed to make. And it's all happening on the full-length podcast. If you want to hear more, you have to go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level. And what is going on when people sign up there, Henry?
They get access to the entire back catalog of What a Cartoon Movie. If you see in here recent ones like Tokyo Godfathers and Paranorman, or older ones like Kiki's Delivery Service or South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, and you're like, oh man, I want to hear this whole thing, you get them all at once. I'd say over 250 hours of What a Cartoon Movies will be at your fingertips for that $10 a month. And you'll get each new episode each month. In addition to that, you get all the $5 stuff we do exclusively for Patreon subscribers. Every month, a new episode of Talking Futurama and Talking of the Hill, where we talk about those shows super in-depth, just like we do on Talking Simpsons. Plus, in that back catalog, you hear us talk about every episode of The Critic, of Mission Hill, and 18 episodes so far of Blabbing About Batman, the animated series. Us talking about our favorite episodes of the Caped Crusaders adventures. You can find out all of that stuff for yourself if you sign up at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And if you've never been on Patreon before, it is very easy to sign up and listen to all of our exclusive content. Once you sign up, you're given a code. You can access that code at any time. And you just drop that code into whatever you use to listen to podcasts. And that way you can listen to our bonus podcast alongside of our free podcast in whatever app you choose. And there is also a Patreon app that works very well for any smart device you might have. But whatever way you do it, it is so easy to access all of the extra content waiting for you at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. So get your lemonade and Cracker Jacks and get ready for a little preview of our very long podcast all about Dumbo. Let's talk about the history of Dumbo. So let's set the stage for where Disney was at this time. Also, we recommend you go back and listen to the Pinocchio podcast from 2022. A lot of fun on that podcast. Mm-hmm. So people always forget this, and even this was news to me, but Pinocchio, a massive flop. 1940, two massive flops for Disney, Pinocchio and Fantasia. Of course, it's the year 1940, and lots of things are happening, including the spread of conflict in Europe. And Disney loses most of its international market because war is spreading in Europe. We'll be at war very soon once Pearl Harbor is bombed. And so, yeah, Pinocchio, big bomb. Fantasia, even bigger bomb, because Disney built special sound equipment to play the sound of the movie. It was called Fantasound. They had to dismantle all but one of those for the war effort.
Ooh, wow, yeah. Man.
Can you imagine if anyone was asked to do anything extra for the country now?
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah. That would never, ever happen. No company. Well, I mean, we just saw that in, you know, I guess the companies, they get a big bunch of money from like COVID vaccines, like CVS and Walgreens became the government's distributor of COVID vaccines, probably for a shitload of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If Biden was like, start collecting scrap, the White House would be stormed.
Yes, that's true.
Start a victory garden.
You got guys, gas rationing. Could you imagine this country if there was gas rationing?
I mean, we stuck together, but it was for the sake of war, but I guess World War II is kind of tricky to talk about.
Yeah.
This is not a podcast about the war, but
yeah. I guess you guys want to listen to our Donald Duck Fuhrer's Face episode of What a Cartoon. We also dig a bit into the the effects of war in Europe and in the Pacific theater and its effect on Disney as well. Yes.
Yeah. And I should say that personally right now, I don't want to give anything to my country. But in 1940, there was the idea that you would benefit from it. There's some kind of social contract because the New Deal just happened.
Yeah, we had FDR and the New Deal rolling out, and also, like, you know, which was to combat a more outright socialism in this country. Like, there was an actual spirit of helping others after everybody got poor and there was more income inequality than there'd ever been before. Yes. In America up to that point.
The idea of any Democrat doing anything close to the New Deal is just would never happen.
What are you talking about? Like, Bob Biden's the modern FDR. Don't you read the headlines?
We made you a marketplace, okay? Yeah, what more do you want?
And of course, you know, there's cutoffs on that marketplace, but yes, that's just how it is.
Eligibility windows. Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about Dumbo here.
Yes.
So Disney, they need money. They need lots of money or it's all over for Walt Disney. Dumbo is the answer. So Dumbo, intentionally made to be a cheap movie that can get out very quickly. Like, animation is done in basically 6 months. These expensive techniques done in Pinocchio, Fantasia, and the upcoming Bambi are really slowing down production. I think, like, technically Bambi's in production for almost a decade.
Really?
From like pre-production to the final release.
Wow, that's wild, man.
Also, I want to say up front, records from this era are spotty at best. Watching documentaries about Dumbo and Disney, reading books about it, a lot of dates are different, a lot of time periods are different, and the Disney archives only collect so many things, so your sources may differ. I just went with what seemed like the most reliable sources for this history.
Yeah, no, I mean, when we talked about in Pinocchio, like, all these techniques that they really figured out there, especially like the multi-plane camera, you're not seeing that as much here. There's not as many like show-offy shots. Like, I would bet the budget of just Monstro in Pinocchio would cover the budget of Dumbo entirely.
Yeah, there's not a lot of effect shots. This movie is made for a third of the cost of like Pinocchio or Fantasia. It's made to be very, very cheap.
A fun little side story too. A few months ago, I went on a trip. My husband got us a nice little trip. It was a day trip down to Burbank. We got to visit the Walt Disney studio offices. Like, this was a super fans like tour of the offices, and it was really neat. We didn't get to see too many official things, and also we didn't even get to walk through the Hall of Fame garden because, no joke, it was the premiere party was being set up for the Santa Clauses TV show.
Oh, well, that's important.
Day. Yes, yeah. But it was really cool. You got to walk down hallways with official art and posters, even like from Beauty and the Beast, Glenn Keane's pencil art for a couple scenes, which was really cool. And we got to see, I think it was a real one, but certainly it was maintained well, and it's not in the same exact state it was. But it was the multi-plane camera. Like, they had it right there, and they're like, and here's the shots from Pinocchio. Like, here, look through it. Like, they set it up to make it look like how it would look if you were looking at Pinocchio.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah.
Yeah, check out our Pinocchio podcast and know what we're talking about.
Yeah, there wasn't too much Dumbo stuff around, I'll say. It was a lot more Seven Dwarfs and Pinocchio. And then we did get to explore Walt Disney's office, like, that was maintained as it had been the day he died, including the side room where he would guzzle booze and eat that chili.
Did you smell the nicotine in there?
That had been washed out. That was funny. We pushed the docent, the woman who was showing us around, this younger woman who was very nice. She was great. When we asked about cigarettes, she's like, yeah, I'm told not to really talk about that. But yes, when they pulled out, they tried to replace the walls and stuff in one area, it was full of cigarette butts from animators just shoving cigarette butts into the wall.
That's like in old apartments. You'll find a lot of the time there's just a slot in the wall where you just stick your razors when you're done using them. So, like, what were they even thinking?
What the hell?
Yeah,
that's
like,
insane.
This will fill up after a certain amount of time, you guys.
I mean, they're so thin, I guess. But, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's a little nutty. Yeah. So let's talk about the origins of Dumbo before the movie. So where does Dumbo come from? Well, it all starts with a book, kind of. So author Helen Aberson and her then husband, illustrator Harold Pearl, created a few Dumbo prototypes for the roll-a-book format. Now, warning up front, I'll be saying the words roll-a-book a lot.
Roll-a-book. I've never heard of this.
And there's a reason why.
Okay.
So the roll-a-book format is essentially a story built into a small box that contains about a dozen or so illustrations with text. And to read the story, you turn a knob and it basically scrolls to the next part of the story. So it's essentially like turning a book into an app in 1939.
I see. It's like the Viewmasters of our childhood. But instead of the cha-chunk, it's a turning. You turn a dial.
Yes, yes. And it's just like the size of a book. I don't know what they thought they were doing, but I guess even 80 years ago, the idea was kids think reading is boring.
Yes, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, that's for what your school marm forces you to do. And then you get a paddling in your segregated school.
That's true. Paddling was on the rise in 1939. So not a popular format. Only one Rolla book was published. That was 1939's The Lost Stone of Agog. Dumbo was intended to be the second, but that's when the Rolla book creator, Everett Whitmire, sold the idea of Dumbo to Disney after working out a deal with the original authors Aberson and Pearl. And the big shocker is no trace of Aberson's original story or Pearl's original artwork even exists. No one can find it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, so that early, Disney was like, you know what? No, I want this story, and people don't even get to see it. We're just buying this. It doesn't even get to be a book. Wow. When you said it was a Rolla book, I was like, oh, and then it must have been published, and Disney saw it, and then he's like, okay, I'll make that into a movie. But Walt was that ahead of it. That's wow.
He scooped up the rights. So to step back a bit in time, Whitmire guy, Everett Whitmire, the Rolla book guy, when he bought the story of Dumbo from Aberson and Pearl, he got another artist to rework it into the Rolla book format, and that artist was Helen Durney. And to this day, Helen Durney's illustrations are the only traces we have of this original Dumbo before it was a movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And apparently, Walt Disney could have had a Dumbo prototype in the Rolla book format. The company could have had a few floating around, but no one has seen it since 1939, if it ever existed.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, Disney doesn't like, even when Walt was alive, he did not like things that interfered with his branding, like other versions of Peter Pan or whatnot. So with this one, he can fully control it. Like, no, Dumbo is the Disney Dumbo. You can't imagine a different Dumbo than my Dumbo.
And they eventually released their own Dumbo book to go along with the movie, but it's a bit different, and I'll talk about why soon.
Ooh.
So how did Disney find out about Dumbo? Well, one of their head marketing folks, Herman Kamen, was approached by the Rolla book people first. And the Rolla book people used Durney's illustrations of Dumbo to demonstrate their product. And seemingly, the Rolla book folks were going to Disney to say, will your artist illustrate our books? They were looking for that. Or to possibly rework the illustrations Durney had done, because they're not that great.
I see.
Yes.
So this guy came to Disney with one deal, and Disney's counteroffer was, no, but...
we want to buy your elephant story, is what they said.
Tell you what I'm going to do. I'll...
Yes, exactly. So animation historian Michael Barrier was very helpful on this. He's got a very good blog post about what happened to the original Dumbo. So based on the preliminary sketches, here is his summary of the original Dumbo story. Quote, Dumbo is not a baby elephant, but rather, quote, a midget elephant whose ears were extra big and extra pink. He botches his one appearance in the big top when he falls off a box while trying to balance a big rubber ball in his trunk, but there is no general catastrophe. He is then befriended by a robin named Red, the original story's equivalent of Timothy the Mouse. When Dumbo tells Red that he wishes he could fly away from the circus, the robin takes him to the Wise One, an owl, to find out if that is even possible. The owl recognizes Dumbo's ears as a potentially fine pair of wings, and under the Wise One's tutelage, Dumbo soon learns to fly. He keeps his newly acquired skill a secret until the circus comes to Madison Square Garden in New York. Just after all the other elephants have entered the ring, he flies into the arena, triggering general astonishment, followed by universal acclaim. And that is the original story of Dumbo in prototype formats.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, that is quite different. Yes. Yeah. It doesn't seem to be as much about mocking a child as before either.
Yeah. It's like there's no story of people making fun of Dumbo or other elephants doing it. He just kind of messes up once, and then he loses his confidence.
And the mom doesn't seem to be much of a character at all in that either, let alone... you know, it makes more sense that he'd be friends with a bird that would tell him to fly instead of some jerk Brooklynite mouse.
Yeah, this is bird erasure, and I don't like it. So on June 14th, 1939, Dumbo is sold to Walt Disney Productions, and as part of the deal, Aberson and Pearl had a non-Rolla book version of Dumbo published. but this book was illustrated by Disney artists and not adapted from the finished film. Instead, it's adapted from what was emerging in the storyboards in pre-production. So there is a version of Dumbo that's long out of print in book form that is a different version of the story that you see in the movie, because they were kind of directly adapting the roll-a-book version at first before they developed it into a full feature film. I want to say that this original book was put together when they thought Dumbo would be a short.
I see. In general, this is getting ahead of things, but in general, it does feel like a beefed up short, not a shortened movie, is more what it feels like.
Absolutely. Yeah. In like animation and in storytelling.
Like if they had had yet the format of like Make Mine Music or whatever, this would be as long as, you know, the singing whale section of that movie, or I think that one's Make My Music. The point is, it feels like it could be a 20-minute at most short in something else.
Definitely. Yeah. So to sum up, I'm sorry if that was confusing, but the original book authors had a book published. They didn't illustrate it, but it's based on the prototype version of Dumbo that Disney was working on, different from the movie. The guys developing the movie into a feature thought, boy, we're going to really screw over book sales, aren't we?
So yeah, if you're a kid who is leaving the theaters and saying like, let's head down to Sears and Roebuck and buy the Dumbo book, then you're very confused at how different it is from the film you just saw in theaters.
But then eventually Disney does adapt the movie as a straight adaptation into a book. It's a little golden book that came out in 1947, and you can still buy that today. They keep reprinting those old books.
That was something my mom loved as when I was a kid, that she could buy the little golden books that she knew as a kid and read them to me. Like, she still has them. She put them out at Christmas time again, of just like, here's all your favorite Christmas books from when you were a kid.
Oh, very cute. Are they all Disney stuff? Or
there's some Disney. There's a mix of stuff. One of my favorites were the Max and Ruby books, which would later, when I was not a child, get turned into an animated series on Nick Jr.
Max and Ruby, what are those?
They're two little rabbits, two little white rabbits.
I think I have the vision of them in my mind.
Yeah,
does one have a bonnet, perhaps?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. They were kids' books when we were kids, just like how Clifford and Arthur were kids' books when we were kids, but we were old by the time, and by old I mean like 14.
Yeah, I was too old for Arthur.
Yes,
and it just ended.
I know, it's that Arthur character. Why did they make him look like me even when he's an adult? I don't like that.
You're not wearing a lot of sweater vests.
It's true. They should tell me I should start incorporating that.
I'm not so sure about that. So a little epilogue to the story. Aberson and Pearl, once again, the authors of the original Dumbo story, they weren't married long, so they got married in 1938, divorced in 1940, before Dumbo was released, and neither one would publish anything after this, although family members of Aberson claim she had written children's books but that were never published, so there was no other work by these two people ever.
Man, divorce in 1940, scandalous. Actually.
It is.
Yeah.
They were probably blacklisted from the publishing industry.
Yeah, I think Disney definitely fired them, just like Kirk Van Houten's boss at the Cracker Factory.
Maybe single people will write books. We don't want to know.
We don't want to know.
Yeah.
Market we can do without.
One fun fact before we move on to the film's production. So Dumbo, created in 1939, the same year as another very popular reworking of The Ugly Duckling, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's... So many of my Dumbo thoughts were like, wait, I said this on a podcast before about how it's about bullying and the approach to anti-bullying in the late 30s. It's Rudolph. That was when we talked about it.
It has the same moral, like, show the cruel organization you're stuck in that your freak powers can earn them money, and then they'll like you.
Then you'll be a superstar. Yeah. And also it is about being bullied for being slightly different within a same group of people.
Yes,
too.
That
yes,
too.
Yeah.
But yes, go back to our Rudolph podcast. The Montgomery Ward book comes out in 1939, and the Dumbo story written in 1939. Coincidental, completely. Mm. There's no inspiration between the two.
Well, I mean, and The Ugly Duckling, a big hit back then too, which I think... I like to think that joke on The Simpsons maybe killed The Ugly Duckling as a thing you teach kids about. Like, so you're saying I'm ugly? No.
Up front, you're ugly, but...
No, you're one of the good ones who make fun of the ugly one. Yeah.
Yes. One day you can pick on the ugly. So that's the story of the book. Again, I'm sorry for saying roll a book so much. When I got into the research of this, I'm like, oh, roll a book. Was that like a very popular format? No, only one was ever made. I think it was just a bad idea.
It was a big old flop that just happened to get the rights to Dumbo.
As soon as the guy got his Dumbo movie, he was like, screw roll a book.
I'm heading home.
There's like a weird side story in that Eleanor Roosevelt, the president's wife, might have helped the roll a book thing go into production, not monetarily, of course, but she takes credit for it because the Everett guy, whatever his last name is, I already forgot it, but the Rollabook guy was at a party and Eleanor Roosevelt was there, and they happened to get into an elevator together, and he was very glum, and he told her his problem with, like, oh, I can't sell this book idea, and she was like, well, you keep at it, young man, and she's like, and because of my advice, Rollabooks are so successful these days. Check your local bookstores, everybody.
Oh, man, Eleanor, it's not one of her biggest successes, and I'd say that's so funny that she tried to take credit for it.
Well, it's in her diaries. You can read about her taking credit for Roll a Book.
Man, that's
thinking it'll be a success, but they only do one.
Oh, that's funny.
So Dumbo movie history, again, records are spotty at best. I read a lot of Michael Barrier's great book, and it's a very, very thick book. The 1999 book, Hollywood Cartoons, American Animation in Its Golden Age. It's like 700 pages. It's a giant tome. It helped me with Pinocchio. And he puts like corrections to the book on his website because new information comes out all the time. But, you know, reading the passages in that, then I watch the official Disney stuff and like dates don't match up and names don't match up. And I'm just trying to go with what feels right to
me. Why, official Disney things fudging the story of the making of something?
Just a little bit.
That's crazy.
And I think it's also some of the researchers on there that they interview. I'm like, who is this historian? How do I know what he's saying is correct?
I
went to grad school, so it's all about, are my sources right? Is this source accurate?
Was Leonard Maltin in the official Disney one?
He wasn't, no.
Oh, okay.
But Michael Barrier is very much of like the Jerry Beck and Leonard Maltin era. He was like one of the first guys taking this seriously, interviewing all these people as they're dying in the 1970s.
They were the Henry and Bob of their time, of just like dorks who cared more than anybody else about these things and interviewed people before they died.
We're not going to nursing homes to interview like Mike Judge yet, though.
Yeah, the Simpsons creators aren't that old yet. They're not that old yet. They're getting up there. I saw Al Jean just turned 61.
They're going to be hitting their 70s pretty soon. Yeah. John Swartzwelder already is, but he's been off the show for like 20 years now. So,
but I guess James L. Brooks is in his like late 80s. I actually heard he has a secret birthday. That's I heard this was said on a podcast, which is public information, but this is behind the paywall. I had heard on the Sloppy Boys podcast, our friend Tim Kalpakis, who worked for James L. Brooks, him and his friends on it joked of like, you know James L. Brooks' real birthday, don't you? And he's like, I do. And I was like,
is he as old as Mr. Burns?
And maybe he's like 92, actually, and not like 87 or whatever.
He looked very healthy when he was forced to meet me.
He did. Yes. Yeah. He was very, as he awkwardly shook our hands, he looked very healthy.
We touched the hands of a millionaire. So, yes. Moving on to the movie history, Dumbo intended to be a short subject, but that changes in January of 1940. Disney needs a project with a much quicker turnaround. Pinocchio has not yet failed at the box office, but they know at this point we are screwed. We cannot do international releases, and that is what makes us so much more money.
And Pinocchio is like made to be seen in like Bavaria and France and Italy. Like, it's made to be a huge hit in those countries with this general European vibe. And that dang Hitler is messing it all up.
And hey, even Japan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They
love
Disney at this point.
Yeah.
So the people employed to turn this into a feature film are the story artists Dick Humor and Joe Grant. And no, there is no Dick Humor in Dumbo.
You know, if you look at the trunks enough, you can be like, does that look like a penis? Like, yeah, that's some Dick Humor.
If you squint.
Yeah.
So yes, they were employed to basically turn the very, very thin picture book story of Dumbo into something 10 times longer than your average Disney short. Because the short's like 6 minutes, this is 64. So that's why this movie is like 8 sketches, basically.
But good sketches.
Yeah.
I think they're all good.
Some are okay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The one that really takes it to Working People. Ooh, I don't like that one.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's
we
true.
Spend all our money and we suck and we're dumb.
I mean, that's old Walt right there.
Oh, absolutely. That offended me more than the crows. The faceless black men that are like, we're stupid and we spend all our money on drinking.
Yes, yeah, that actually, yeah, you know, I never listened to those lyrics before.
Yeah. Now, here's up front, I'll say this and we'll talk about the crows later. I think the crows are cool guys. guys and I want to hang out with them.
Yeah.
They are free. The elephants are slaves in this world.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And then they get chained up and have their children ripped from their arms.
Yeah.
Like,
even with Dumbo's talents, he doesn't escape.
Yeah, he just gets to make the assholes who own him richer.
Yeah.
Like, oh boy, it's depressing.
It's not cool.
Yeah.
So Dumbo was not the sole film Disney planned on making on the cheap. It was $700,000 in 1940s money, and that's one third the cost of Pinocchio. So that's what they considered a cheap movie. But they had two other less lavish movies in production. One, an adaptation of The Wind in the Willows, and what would eventually become Mickey and the Beanstalk. These would eventually become part of the package movies of the 40s.
Later 40s too. Yeah, we talked about that with the Ichabod Crane episode that we did, the flip side of The Wind in the Willows.
Yeah, because after Bambi, it's wartime and it's package movie time until the 1950s.
Well, and also, I mean, the government's paying them to a lot of their top animators to make propaganda, so
yeah.
they're pretty busy.
Walt, this famous socialism hater Walt Disney was saved by the war and the government giving him huge contracts.
I know,
think about that.
Yeah,
everyone.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more about that very soon.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I'm certain he would have preferred that FDR lose the election in 1940.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
But then he was bailed out. So since Dick Humor and Joe Grant are the guys who expanded Dumbo into a feature, they're essentially the writers of the movie. Let's talk about who they are. And by the way, we probably talked about these guys under Fuhrer's Face because they were the writers of that short.
Oh, yeah. I think we did. Yeah, yeah.
So just to wrap up their careers very briefly here, Dick Humor, I love pointing out how old these guys were and how early they were born in history. So Dick Humor, born in 1898.
Holy.
He began his animation career in 1916, and he was instrumental in developing the Coco the Clown character for Fleischer. That's how old he was.
Holy
yeah.
crap. Wow, that's incredible.
So he's like in his 40s when Dumbo is out.
That's why this movie has so much clown content.
Oh boy, this movie loves clowns in a way I don't understand. So he originally hired to work on Silly Symphonies, Dick Humor, and then was paired with Joe Grant, head up Fantasia. And apparently Dick had an intense interest in classical music, which is why he is like a big Fantasia guy at Disney. And Walt would often introduce him to people is, this is Dick Humor. He loves operas. So kind of calling him gay, I guess.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
what a fruitcake. Anyway, that's what his son said, that Walt would introduce his dad to people with that kind of expression. Yes. He loves operas.
Loves operas. Wink. Does he say?
He did the limp hand wrist gesture there. Side note, Dick Humor started at Disney in 1933, 17 years into his animation career.
Holy cow.
Again, these people were there at the birth of animation.
Yeah,
a lot of them.
Yeah, these are the guys who like invented animation. This is so deep. This it was something we talked about with like I always think of with Miyazaki, that for Americans they think he like appeared like, oh, his first thing with Nausicaa. It's like, no, he worked in animation for 25 years before Nausicaa. So.
Yeah, I mean, one of these guys, and I think it was Dick Humor, he got into animation because he saw Gertie the Dinosaur.
Wow.
He saw Winsor McCay's roadshow of Gertie the Dinosaur.
Man.
And that's what inspired him to go into animation.
That's amazing.
So yes, Dick Humor, he worked at Disney up until the 50s and was often paired with Joe Grant on projects, and he passed away in 1979 at the ripe old age of 81. It's also,
he was too old to get to be a nine old man.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
The nine old men were like born in 1910. This guy is 1898. He can't make it. So Joe Grant, the other writer of the movie, originally a caricature artist for the LA Record in the 1920s, Walt hired him to work on the 1933 short Mickey's Gala Premiere, which required him to design cartoon versions of many celebrities. And I watched part of this online, and hey, they're pretty good.
Yeah, you forget just how many shorts were just like, just draw a famous person. Like, oh, you know, I just because we can't actually hire the Marx Brothers doesn't mean we can't draw them into this.
You also forget how many Mickey Mouse shorts there are. I think I've seen six in my life, and there's like 300 of them.
Yeah, it really only hit me the extreme number of them when I went to the little theater they have on Main Street in Disneyland that just plays a ton of the black and white ones on a loop over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a few dozen of them.
Where you go into so you don't die of heat stroke.
Yes, yeah. Or hey, if you're trying to get one of those 7 a.m. passes, it's got good Wi-Fi in there.
That's a tip for everybody out there.
Yeah.
So Joe Grant would then work on character designs for Silly Symphonies and then would eventually establish the character model department at Disney, a very revolutionary thing at an animation studio. He was a major player at Disney, but he left in 1949 to pursue other ventures. And Wikipedia tells me he was also in the greeting card industry and the ceramics business. So he was really spreading his artistic skills around.
Oh, interesting. And maybe greeting cards pay a little better than old Walt.
Could
perhaps.
Be. Yeah. In a shocking move, though, he returns to Disney 45 years after he left. So he worked at the studio 4 days a week throughout the late 80s and early 90s and contributed ideas and gags to movies like Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, Pocahontas, Mulan, and Fantasia 2000. He worked on the original Fantasia.
Wow, man.
And Fantasia 2000. And he literally died at his desk in his home office right before his 97th birthday in 2005.
Good God, yeah. Man. Boy, that, you know, I know that Fantasia 2000 was a big project for Roy E. Disney, so I could see him definitely wanting, if he can get anybody who worked with Walt to still come in and work on stuff. But man, to have a 93-year-old man like pitching like gags for Lumiere or whatever, like, it's so funny.
Yeah, he loved to work, and Chicken Little is dedicated to his memory. How respectful.
Oh, God, geez. Yeah, just how he'd want it to be. Their attempt to make their own Shrek. Like, oh, how good for them.
I forgot about that. Yes. I haven't seen it yet.
That could be a hate watch one for us.
All I know is Chicken Little is a summon in Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yes, yeah. And that Zach Braff is the voice.
Ooh,
I know that.
Don't like that. 2004 short Lorenzo was spearheaded by him and based on an idea that he had at Disney, but it was scrapped in the 40s. So it's not on Disney Plus. All of these shorts should be on Disney Plus.
Yeah. I remember watching that one because it's on like Vimeo or something. Like, how is that not one on there? There was this brief period where they let them do shorts again for the reason you do shorts, which is to train animators for feature. And then after that, they're like, fuck it. We're killing 2D anyway. Who needs training?
And you're also trying to win Oscars, too,
yes,
with the shorts.
Yeah,
but they should all be online.
Yeah, though I guess they just gave up the short subjects because they're like, it's just going to be Pixar anyway.
Yeah.
Pixar shorts always going to win.
And those get viewed by people, mm-hmm. and those are on Disney+. Also, side note, I think there's another cartoon guy called Joe Grant because I really don't think that before returning to Disney, this guy wrote one episode of Super Mario World. I don't think an 82-year-old man was like, I'll work at Deke for a day.
That sounds like an IMDb mistake.
Yeah, yes, it sounds like a real goof.
At the very least, Deke would not... He couldn't even do it to like get like WGA membership or whatever because Deke is famously non-union.
Yeah. So if Dumbo feels like a series of sketches, well, that's how it was pitched to Walt Disney. Apparently no other movie was written like this, but Humor and Grant would basically deliver their ideas piecemeal to Walt with cliffhangers at the end intended for Walt to get Walt excited about reading the next part.
Oh, wow. That makes it makes so much more sense in how scenes just like end and it's almost unrelated to like this was the thoughts I kept having and it just like, am I just too programmed about what I think the rules of movies are? Because I'm like, shouldn't we see Timothy the Mouse sooner than 30 minutes into the movie?
He comes in way too late.
Yeah.
And the idea I get, I mean, Walt always put on a good face for the public, but I feel like he didn't like the idea of having to make this movie, but it was necessary because the way Dumbo looks is not the direction he was taking feature animation. And I think he was a little ashamed of Dumbo, but it was necessary.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, also it wasn't one of those ones where you hear him tell the story all the time of like, oh yeah, I read this book to my kids and that's why I wanted to make it. Yeah.
Now let's talk about the specifics of the production. So Dumbo, it's still a good-looking movie. It's still Disney in the 40s. 40s animation, always spectacular, no matter who's making it. But this one required lots of shortcuts to get it out the door very quickly. I could talk about those in broad detail. So especially, like, put this next to Pinocchio. You shouldn't put anything next to Pinocchio, but it's made by the same studio a year later. So it's fair in this case.
Fantasia even looks a little cheap compared to Pinocchio.
Yeah, Pinocchio, nothing will look that good ever again. So some shortcuts they took. One of them was using simple and more stylized watercolor backgrounds instead of intricately detailed ones of Pinocchio. And like Pink Elephants on Parade, there's no background for the most part.
Yeah. That's he's blackout drunk. So
yes.
It's black.
Surrealism is cheaper than photorealism, right?
that's true.
Yeah. And to streamline the production, they often relied on photostats, and photostats are primitive photocopies before photocopies existed.
Oh.
They relied on photostats of story sketches instead of taking those drawings to the layout process. So this is a preview of where Disney would be going in the 50s with their Xerox technology making things cheaper.
I hate that Xerox technology so much. I don't want to say hate. Hate's a strong word.
The thing I don't like is when Disney tries to put a filter over it on Disney Plus to pretend they never did that in the first place. So it just looks like a blobby mess. I like seeing it all scratchy.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, that's even worse. Yeah. We were just talking about that Xerox thing when we did Rescuers Down Under, because original Rescuers is like, it's a late one in the Xerox process, and it just looks, especially on in 4K and the way Disney treats it to get it 4K, it just looks so like flat, just yeah. like so very flat.
In a way, I like the polish, but I like seeing the artifice, and it's kind of cool when you can see like the construction lines of the anatomy of the characters that they couldn't quite get rid of after taking it to the cell process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're too, everything's got to be perfect. Well, I mean, they're also scared a child will turn it off, you know? Mm. I mean, I'm at least...
That's going to be true of, I think, most of Disney's catalog until, like, 1991.
Yeah. Well, like, Dumbo, even though it's in 4K, it is not in widescreen, and so I wonder if kids even just go, like, wow, what the hell's this? Like, do children watch things that don't fill the entire TV screen?
The TV's broken, and think of how small Dumbo would be on, like, an iPad or a phone.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, and also, he's, like, silent the whole time. He's kind of boring as a character.
Yeah, he's a bit of a Dumbo, as we call him. So, other shortcuts they took. So, some animators had ownership over their characters, but at this point, a lot of them found themselves in more supervisory roles. Like, I will draw some key stuff for this scene, but I'm going to pass it down to some lesser folks just to get this out the door.
Oh.
And Timothy the Mouse had a main animator, but according to my research, he was the character that was passed around the most.
Okay, yeah. Wow, man. So yeah, this wasn't following the now, you know, very standardized thing at Disney feature of just like, well, yeah, you have your character. This is your character. Make sure he's always on model and all that. This seems like it was pretty informal.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of what the supervising animator does now. It's like they will do their own scenes, but often they're just doing the key drawings and passing it down and making sure everything looks right for that character.
Okay.
So, yes, the production of Dumbo. Oh yeah, one other thing. There's not a lot of, like, effect shots. Mm. I remember, like, Dumbo taking a bath, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, there's very little water in this one. There's very, I guess, like, that fire is an effect shot, you know? But even... man, I feel like even his flying should feel cooler. Like, you should think, like, wow, a flying elephant. I never seen that, but it doesn't look good. I don't know. It doesn't look that neat.
If the entire movie is leading to that point, it should look a lot better.
Yes, yeah.
It should be your Monstro scene, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah. But I guess, again, the wars are coming. Time to tighten the belts.
Yeah. So the production of Dumbo also overlapped with the Disney animator strike of 1941.
Oh, yes.
Which,
yeah,
I believe we talked about more than a few times on this podcast, correct?
A number of times, yes. Yeah, we talked about it a bit with definitely in my profile of Iwo Takamoto that we did in Scooby-Doo, as well as, I think it was brewing in Pinocchio. It's a big subject. One of my favorite things in official Disney things is when they have to touch on it. Like,
yes,
on that tour, my husband, he was being a little like, he's kind of poking the bear of like, and also, wasn't there an animator strike on Buena Vista Street here? And she's like, I guess I can't. They never tell me not to talk about that, but I don't think I really should go into that.
Hey, there's an entire, if you go to the Walt Disney Family Museum, and you should before you leave this area, Henry, I yes, definitely recommend it. There is a whole room about the strike in the museum, which is, it's nice that they're presenting that information. Obviously, it's sympathetic to Walt because the narrative is it was the hardest decision Walt ever had to make, and it broke his heart so much.
You know, in the Disney Plus newer documentary about the history of the parks, when they get to that, they also just frame it as like, and Walt was also feeling bad after the strike. That really hurt his feelings. And he started thinking more about parks than the animation. Like, that's how it's framed in that doc.
The poor guy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think we also covered this in the UPA episode.
Oh, yes. It's all about that.
Art Babbitt's, correct? Mm-hmm.
Babbitt's a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll sum it up here really quick to let you know what was going on. So according to my research, the movie was mostly complete by the time the five-week strike started in late 1941, May of 1941, rather. Animation for the movie began in fall of 1940.
Right, and the thing that's coming out is, like, technically not, I mean, I guess it's counted in their numbering, the Reluctant Dragon, like, that was the one that was coming out, and That's why if you see footage of the strike, there's a lot of dragon related signage there, and it's because they were tying into that, I believe.
A character nobody remembers.
Yes, yeah.
Animators had to cross the picket line to finish the movie, though. Mm. So to summarize the strike, animators Art Babbitt, Bing, Bill Littlejohn, boom, met with Walt Disney and a labor union leader to demand he unionize the studio, and Walt reacted very poorly. Disney basically threw a tantrum and gathered all of his employees for a big public speech. Well, I guess private speech because it was just to them. And I love this quote, and I think I've read it before, but I want to read it. It shows you the worst way to react to people trying to unionize. Quote, in the 20 years I've spent in this business, I've weathered many storms. It's been far from easy sailing. It required a great deal of work, struggle, determination, competence, faith, and above all, unselfishness. Some people think we have a class distinction in this place. They wonder why some people get better seats in the theater than others. They wonder why some men get spaces in the parking lot and others don't. I've always felt and will always feel that the men that contribute most to this organization should, out of respect alone, enjoy some privileges. My first recommendation to the lot of you is this. Put your own house in order. You can't accomplish a damn thing by sitting around and waiting to be told everything. If you're not progressing as you should, instead of grumbling and growling, do something about it. Guess what, Dick? They tried to unionize. That's what they were trying to do something about it.
He means not whining. Like, that is such... That is pure Walt Disney there. Yeah. I love that speech. I've read that before too. It's just so amazing.
Yeah.
Like
sorry to interrupt, but I love how it's like, number one, I'm not selfish and I rule. Number two, you guys got to get your shit together. Yeah. And I shouldn't have to tell you what to do, you know?
If you're at the back of the line, it's because you suck. And if you get paid less than this other guy, you suck. Get your shit together.
Yeah, like people are just being paid arbitrary amounts with no rhyme or reason. And also, I mean, like this is easy to forget about if you're not aware of world history or American history, but this is right after the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And it might be hard to recognize how huge a moment that was in American history because we lived through like three more that were kind of bigger in the last 20 years.
Yeah, these guys, I mean, they're seeing all this success at Disney, and like I've read the stories of, like, you know, for Art Babbitt, I think one of the things for him was him finding out that, like, oh, this in-betweener makes so much less than me, and, you know, if I can get paid this much, couldn't this guy get paid a little more? And yeah, getting your house in order is going to your boss and saying, I should get paid more. But just know that this is still what every boss thinks.
Oh, yeah. They resent having to hire people, and they think they're doing them a favor if they pay them.
And also, if the structure currently in place pays them much more than everybody else, and they feel, well, the wages are what they're supposed to be. I mean, also, rich people all think they're rich because they're right and great, and like they don't think it's through like luck or anything. And I mean, especially if you're Walt Disney, who an insane workaholic, who, you know, even his own like friendly versions of his story growing up is like his father tortured him with constant work, and he thinks work's how you like own buy heaven or whatever. He's going to think everybody's lazy if they're complaining they're not paid enough. And he's just thinking back to like, well, when I had Oswald stolen from me, I didn't whine about it. I just started another company.
It's like real Protestant work ethic. And again, historically, they went through the Depression. The Depression was vital to teach people how socialism was like a necessity for survival. Like, we did not have Social Security until the Depression happened. That's why, even though the recent depressions were bigger in the scale of things, we have some sort of social safety net. It sucks. Yeah. The net is falling apart. It's frayed. It's bad. We need better ones. But nothing. They had nothing in the 30s.
I mean, the last, I'd say Reagan onward has been about trying to cut up that net as much as possible and create as many holes and make sure the net never gets like fixed. But yeah, we still technically have it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as self-employed people, we have to pay like a ton of Social Security tax. And I'm wondering, like, will I ever get this?
Yeah. I definitely don't think I'm going to get that Social Security money.
Yeah.
It's a real gamble there. Yes.
Hey, that's what the 401k is for. You got to gamble with your future.
Oh, God. Everything's gambling in America, I tell you.
Absolutely. Insurance, 401k, you name it. But yeah, like, Disney made a huge mistake. And I said this on Pinocchio, like, who knows how much the studio could have done? Like, who knows what heights they could have reached if they were able to unionize successfully, if Walt didn't react this way, and so on and so on.
Like, also, if Hitler hadn't taken over Germany, who knows what would have happened. If they did not capitulate and make him chancellor, Who knows what would have happened?
There's a lot of what ifs in 1940.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, we're sounding like episode of Hinge Points here.
It's true. Yeah, I don't want to steal their bit. But yes, you can do an entire podcast series on the strike, but here are the broad strokes of the results. Disney fires Art Babbitt and 16 others attempting to unionize, and that's what causes the strike. Mm. These are illegal firings, and Art Babbitt takes his case to the Supreme Court and wins.
Holy.
Yeah.
I always forget that part, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like this, like you can read the Supreme Court decision that's like, give Art Babbitt a ton of money because you fired him illegally.
I'm sure that made Walt love Art Babbitt even more.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure no matter what job you start, in your contract it says you won't unionize. Actually, when I became a grad student and a paid teaching adjunct, they made me sign a thing saying I wouldn't unionize. Mm, so yeah. this is what we live in today.
I mean, yeah, it gets shared around online every now and then, but those videos from like Walmart or Target training things that are like, have to have the section of, if somebody tells you to unionize, know that you don't have to, and tell your manager about that. Like, we're a happy family here.
It's bullying.
Yes, yeah. it's bullying. Yes. It's actually pretty sus if someone tells you to join a group.
Yeah.
You know who also did that? Hitler.
It's true. Yeah. What was the war of the Nazis except for one big union?
Yeah, they're National Socialists, you know, actually. Yeah.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks.
But yes, a big, big goof by Disney, but... As a result, like, you know, UPA gets formed, Bill Melendez goes off and does cool things like peanut specials, like everybody is cast to the winds and they do cool stuff. But if they had all been able to stay together, who knows, it could have been so great.
Well, yeah, and it's I've seen Disney biographies that talk about how that for Walt, it did. Not that he was always the boss, like the Yen Sid in Fantasia, which is made, you know, around the same time. It's about what a severe boss he could be, but he thought they were all a bunch of pals.
Funnily enough, Yen Sid animated by a guy who left after the strike.
That's funny.
Yes, and we'll talk about him soon. But okay. So, yes, we talked about the unionization. We talked about the strike. Let's talk about false trivia about this movie.
Oh, boy. All right.
So this brings us to the clown scene, and this has been largely seen as a way to demonize the striking workers at Disney. It's even said the silhouettes of the clowns are silhouettes of distinct animators who led the strike or were like big pro-union folks. And I can't find a source that verifies this. I cannot find a single source that tells me this is true on the record. And also, if you look at the timeline, the movie is mostly finished at the end of the strike, and this clown scene would have been boarded months and months earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine that they maybe were putting like ink and paint on it by that during the strike, but... fully conceptualizing it or laying it out like that, that seems unlikely, and you'd have to completely change the character model.
So unless the clown scene was like rushed into production as a way to comment on the strike, which it could have been, I don't know, but it seems unlikely to me. If you can find me a source on this, I'd love to hear it. But it feels like this is just the Walt Disney perspective on working people. When the clowns are like, we deserve more money. Yeah. That's just how he feels about working people. I mean, look at how he felt about actors in Pinocchio. Then we have the roustabout song. I mean, it's a part of like the tapestry of his hatred for workers, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he sees them all as like, well, the type of guy who will to give the speech you quoted is also the type of guy who's like, when all these clowns are there together, they probably think the big tops runs because of them, when they're just like a bunch of jerks who just fill up the stage. Like, everybody's coming here for me, the ringmaster.
This is my Marxist view on this movie, by the way. But it's funny how you don't see the faces of the clown or the black men who build the circus. They're just like faceless, just like orcs,
blobs,
basically.
Yeah. No, you know what? Meanwhile, I thought at first, like, oh, yeah, I guess the rule in the movie is you don't see a person's face, right? And I was like, no, you see the ringmaster's face quite a lot. Like, but he's really the only one who's general European accent. I can't really place.
You see the little kid who like makes fun of Dumbo.
Oh yeah,
too.
The little Freddie Moore boy. Who's he's pretty much just Lampwick. That little asshole.
He's pretty much look at the pointy-haired little girl.
Yes, yeah. I think Cletus actually is meant to be a some reference to that.
I think it's a Dumbo reference.